Thanks so much for listening. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Coda Luna and their baby keepsake castle. I personally just put all of my baby's memorabilia into these little keepsake castle boxes, and they are so adorable, functional, and if you really love organization, then you're really going to love this keepsake box. So not only is it a keepsake box, but it also includes a baby book, and it has space for capturing all of the milestones of your baby's early years. And then the keepsake box itself stores all of the memorabilia that you want to keep. So baby's first socks and pacifier and the little hat that they wore when they came home from the hospital. So this keepsake castle with the baby memory book is more than just an organizational product. It's a gateway to preserving the remarkable journey of new parenthood. So take a moment to visit keepsakecastle.com today and embark on creating a lasting legacy of love and nostalgia. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. Today, our guest is Emily Tisch Sussman. She is a podcast host as well. She is a women's empowerment and family policy advocate. She's a leading Democratic political strategist, contributor to Marie Claire and Parents, and she's a mother of three. She's made over 250 appearances on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, HLN, and CBS. Season 2 of her podcast, called She Pivots, is set to release in the spring of 2023. Emily, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh my goodness, I am so happy to be here. This is the topic of your shows is one of the things closest to my heart and the thing I get to talk about the least, actually. So I'm very excited. Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it. And we'll start things off by, I'll invite you to just share a little bit about your background and what led you to doing the work that it is that you're doing.
So all I ever really wanted to do was work really, really hard and make a difference. And it turned out that led me down the path of working on campaigns, becoming a lawyer, working in politics. And I did that for about 15 years. And I just hadn't really thought that much about having kids. Like I didn't always feel a pull. I didn't always think I was going to be a parent. I just really didn't think about it. Like I just thought about it as maybe like a disruption in my work. That was kind of the only way I thought about it. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, I know a lot of people have other problems, but I got pregnant really quickly. So I went into the 2016 election thinking like, I'm going to work for Hillary Clinton's campaign, but I was pregnant and I had never seen a pregnant person work on a campaign. I had never seen a person with kids work on a campaign. The hours are grueling. The work is grueling and you love it, but it's not, you can't balance. There's no balance. So I had my first child 5 days after the Democratic convention. I was there. I saw her take the nomination. I was on CNN the day that I had my first.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
And then I got pregnant immediately after. I had like just wrapped up breastfeeding. So when my son was 8 months, I got pregnant again. So just as I started to think that I was like settling into some semblance of working in a Democratic think tank. I ran campaigns and strategy at the largest Democratic think tank. I lived in Washington and worked on federal policy through the beginning of the Trump administration. Like just as I felt like I was like starting to get, you know, like be myself a little bit at work again, I was pregnant again. And I was so sick through all my pregnancies. So my first two kids are 18 months apart. And then at the end of my second maternity leave, I imagined myself going back into that job and it mattered. Like I felt like the work I did mattered. Like it felt like we could make a difference. And I thought, I am losing my mind. Like I've pretty much lost my mind for the last 2 years. And my older one was now 18 months. So actually like looking for me. I do not feel a connection to babies. Like now that my kids are not babies, I can actually say that. So it wasn't like I was being drawn to them. It was like, I couldn't do my job. I can probably say now that it was postpartum, but like, I honestly don't even know how to say like if it was postpartum or if it just like the way that I thought about myself and my life was incompatible to having two kids 18 months apart. So I didn't go back after my second maternity leave, and I went out on my own and started doing political consulting. I had at that point been doing cable news appearances for about 7 years. And you know, I started to do like, I started to limit my cable news appearances to either like really early in the morning before my kids got up, or weekends when they were napping, when I had no childcare. I'm just trying to figure out how to do it. But like, I don't work in a way that is balanced. I don't know how to do it. And then I got pregnant again. So I had, none of my kids were planned, all accidents. They will work that out in therapy one day. But at that point, I had started a political podcast that was just kind of explaining things in a regular way to people going into the 2020 presidential election. I had the third kid right before the Iowa caucus. I interviewed Hillary Clinton the weekend going into the Iowa caucus. We broke news in the New York Times. And in fact, her staff tried to reschedule that interview. And I was like, look, you said yes. I will either be in her office doing it, or she will be in my hospital room. I am not giving up this interview.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
But then the world shut down. So, you know, I had a 3-week-old, a 2-year-old, and a 3-year-old. My entire support of how I thought of myself of going back to work and consulting through the election was shot, because I had no structure. I had no support. I had no childcare. And I was losing my mind, quite frankly, like really losing my mind. And it just broke me. Like, it broke me to the deepest, darkest place that I'm now, you know, not just the way we were all broken in the pandemic, which was also in there, but that the only sense of success that I had for myself was being a hard charging political strategist. And I'm now going into the reelection of Donald Trump, and this is the defining moment of my career, and I can't do it because my brain is being occupied by 3 little kids who I don't really feel a connection to. So I was resentful of them and locked in with them, which is a great combination. And so I started to rethink, how can I possibly find success and a sense of self for myself in this scenario? And I started feeling like the thing that I needed was I needed to hear stories of other women that did it. Like, it didn't have to be my situation. It could be a different situation. But I needed to hear stories from women who had been faced with something that was outside of their control, and it changed their perspective, and they found success because of it. Not in spite of it, but because of it, because it changed their trajectory. And I thought, well, the thing I know how to do is podcast. So I opened up those conversations, you know, recorded them and opened them up to the world. And I turned that into my show, She Pivots, where I interview women. And the most important piece to me is to have a huge variety of stories. So it's not, some people will say, oh, it's a mommy podcast. Like, it's actually, yes, there is that in there, but that's my story, that my kids killed my career. That doesn't need to be my guest story. In fact, it would be really monotonous and depressing if that was all of my guest story. So we have a huge variety. In the last week, I interviewed a Holocaust survivor. I interviewed a woman who started a business for STEM education. I interviewed Vice President Harris. Like, we have a huge, we can talk about more if you want, but we have a huge range, because that's what I need. And so I hope that's what everyone else wants to hear.
Wow. I mean, like, I am actually having trouble finding words right now. Your story is so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing and being vulnerable and saying the thing that is very hard to say, saying many things that is very hard to say, talking about the balance, not just saying, oh, it's hard to balance, you know, work and family life, but talking about not feeling that connection to your children and the hard part of having little kids that, I mean, are 18 months apart. That in and of itself is enough to break someone, honestly. But then the systems and the failures and the pandemic and the pressure, I mean, thank you so much for the podcast that you have put into the world. Thank you for the work that you are doing in this world. And I also want to talk about why we're having this conversation today. And this is the first time I've ever done this, but I am publishing this episode today, the day that we are recording this, because the timing is important, the topic is important. And also, for any listener that has been listening to this podcast for some time, I don't normally talk about political things a whole lot. I don't really bring my personal politics into these episodes a whole lot. Like there are aspects that I'm sure people can kind of tell with my values and what I find important. But just to address the elephant in the room, because sometimes people say like, well, this is a podcast or this is a business. It has nothing to do with politics. The work that I do in birth, postpartum, and parent mental health in the United States has everything to do with what's going on in the political realm that we live in. So I want to talk about that and like the through line that birth, postpartum, parent mental health has with the state of politics in the United States of America right now. And I also want to acknowledge that there are international listeners that listen to this podcast, which I feel so honored to have, but just wanted to state that this episode is going to be specific to what's going on in the United States, but I also believe that people in an international capacity can have some appreciation for what's going on. So with that, will you please talk about your perspective of how all of this relates and why we're having this conversation today?
Well, first of all, thank you for using this platform for doing it. I really feel like this is the only way that we're going to move anything forward in America is if we take the platforms that we have and acknowledge that like whether something maybe, you know, we get kind of get nervous about entering like a political sphere. So thank you for putting yourself out there. I think it makes it feel safe for others to do so. Absolutely. So thank you.
Yeah.
And also understanding that these things are hard, but they're hard for a reason. Like they're hard because the system failed us.
Yep.
And there's things we can do that can make them better. You know, as I was exiting my political strategy life, I thought, oh my God, I can't work in federal policy anymore. This is so hard for me. Now I work for a women's magazine and I put my podcast out with Marie Claire magazine. I'm an editor for them. Like, I'm like, I am a lifestyle editor now. I keep getting drawn back in because we're so close to having solutions, like a better system that can help us in pregnancy, that can help us in birth, that can help us in postpartum. And we don't have it yet. And it's being debated and it's on the table. So I've spoken in a lot of generalities, but I'll be specific about it.
Thank you.
I think people probably know, but the right to an abortion was overruled by the Supreme Court this year in the Dobbs decision. Already, as of last week, I think 10 more states banned abortion. The Republicans in Congress have, and if you live in a state that still allows abortion, Republicans in Congress have introduced a full ban, a national ban on abortions. So when we think about, well, does it affect me? We all know that abortion care is not just abortion care. It's mother care. It's pregnancy care. It's the ability to be able to be treated correctly for a miscarriage. It's having every option in front of you. So that is on the ballot right now. And I come from a Democratic perspective, but when it comes, I don't have to speak that way. Your audience doesn't have to agree with me,
yep,
but should know where the parties stand, that the Republican Party is pretty much across the country passing full abortion bans and supporting on a federal level, federal abortion bans. Vice President Pence tweeted the other day that everybody should know that if Republicans take control of Congress, which they're within about 3 House seats and one Senate seat of doing, Republicans will pass a full abortion ban nationally. There's other issues. It's not just abortion. It's not just care. Paid leave is on the ballot. Look, I spent the last year as a consultant trying to get a national federal paid leave package passed, and we couldn't do it because the people in Washington didn't really understand exactly how important it was to paid leave. We do not have paid leave, and your international listeners are going to be thinking, what is going on in that shit show over there? Yep. And it's true.
Yep.
Because the United States is an outlier. Only about a third of women have access to any form of paid leave at all. I was one of the luckiest ones where I had 12 weeks of paid leave, and it was brutal. Like when I went back, my kids had just started sleeping through the night, and so I had like a little bit of brain. But if I had to go back 1 minute before that, I would have literally just been a physical body in a seat. You would have not have gotten the benefit of having me as an employee there. For most women, having to work, if they had the ability to take 8 weeks unpaid, it would drain their bank accounts. So we need to have paid leave passed. There are some on the ballot in some states, but in order, it's still like within conversation for it to pass at a federal level, but there need to be more Democrats in Congress to do it, because even Republicans that do support some version of paid leave do not support it as a federal program. They support it as like maybe a suggestion for companies to be able to implement on their own, or borrowing in the future from Social Security to pay for it. So, you know, these things, like, this is all on the ballot. I am also looking pretty locally. That now, I'm a federal strategist, but I've gotten really involved. I live in a swing congressional district. I've gotten involved in our congressional race, but I've also gotten involved with our affordable housing ballot. That's on the initiative that's on the ballot. We don't have enough affordable housing here. Like, I live in one of these post-pandemic places that exploded with population because people moved during COVID, and our teachers, we don't have enough teachers. We don't have enough firefighters. Our hospital has 200 to 300 empty jobs they can't attract for because people can't live here. And so this kind of stuff matters too. So, you know, up and down the ballot, like, it really, really matters, guys.
Yeah. And may I ask, where are you located in the United States?
I live in Long Island.
Okay.
In New York.
Okay. So, and I'm in Georgia. I'm in Cherokee County in Georgia, which, you know, I really pay attention to what's happening locally here as well. Okay. So thank you so much for just laying out the specifics. There's a couple things that I do want to talk about that you said, but I also want to address, connect something that you said before, which is what you were going through postpartum after having your kids and your career was based in politics. Now, for me, I felt similarly about politics. My job had nothing to do with that. But I remember my daughter was born in August of 2016. I took her to vote with me when she was 3 months old. And we voted for the first, what I had hoped would be the first woman president. And I shut down the night of the election. I was up in the middle of the night breastfeeding Grace when I found out that Hillary had lost and that Donald Trump had won the election. And part of me just shut down. I completely shut down, and I cried, and I apologized to her, and I just felt, said, I feel like I failed you. So this is very personal to me. I shut down as well because I thought, I don't have any more to give in this political arena, in voting, in letting my voice be heard. And I differentiate between your work in politics and that was your work, your career. And for me, I'm a citizen that is casting my ballot, and it affected me so much. And I was a mom postpartum dealing with all of the hormones and everything, and I was also in the middle of going back to work. And when I say I shut down, I bring this up because if anybody else listening can identify with this, if this is relatable to anybody, and I just like to make things as simple and easy as possible. I could not watch the news. I could not watch anything political. It was so triggering for me. I did not vote in the next midterm election, and I have guilt about that. But part of it was I had to shut down so that I could just take care of my daughter. That's all I was able to do. And then when 2020 came up, the pandemic came up, everything went nuts. I feel like I woke up out of my sleep that I had to. And I still did not have the wherewithal to deal with stuff, let alone like register to vote or figure out where my polling place was. Like, it was that severe that I couldn't, I was just like, nope, all I can do is just like work to pay my bills and take care of my kids. And so if anybody else in almost November of 2022, if you are feeling like that, I would love for you to walk away from this podcast episode with a couple simple steps that you can take so that you don't feel the way that I did of like guilty of like, I couldn't even like cast my ballot. What would you say to me, you know, 5 years ago?
Well, exactly 5 years ago, I think we were in the exact same position because my son was also born in August of 2016, which actually for me meant that I was on maternity leave for the entire fall of 2016. So I was on TV all the time because I wasn't in the office. So I would bring my baby, breastfeed in the green room, And then I would go, I did a ton of CNN that year. And then I would go on and then take him back home with me. So my first day back at work, you'll appreciate this, was the Monday after the election. And I worked at the think tank that was called the White House in Waiting. Basically, everybody where I worked had a job in the Clinton administration. People had already packed up their offices.
Wow.
So most people didn't even come into work on Monday. Wow. They were just home crying. There was like no work to do.
Yeah.
People just cried for weeks. I came in feeling like I had the same emotional trajectory as you, but mine was a little sped up, I think, because it was my work.
Yeah.
Because I came in Monday and I felt, not only did I feel like I had to fix what I hadn't done in the election, like I had to really work hard and get us in the right track, but I also felt that new mom feeling that I had to prove that I was the same worker that I was before I had kids. So I was like a maniac in 2016 in that, the end of that fourth quarter. But so for people that are starting in a different place, there's a lot of really accessible things that you can do now. The first thing I would say is you may not know if you're registered to vote, and you may not know if you're registered to vote in the right place, even though you think, oh, I vote in the same like location every year. That might have changed. So that's okay though. We're here for you. You can check all of these details at vote.org. Vote.org can register. They can tell you how to register. They can tell you if you can vote early. They can tell you where to vote. They're going to get, vote.org is going to set you all up. You're good there. If you're ready to go a step for, okay, the second thing I would say is make a plan to vote. You are all busy. You are all living in a haze. You do not know what day it is if you are listening to a podcast about postpartum. So vote as quickly and early as possible. I like to vote in person because I like that emotional experience of voting. In many states, you can vote by mail right now. If you think you're never going to get yourself out of bed, you can request a ballot. If you're in New York, tomorrow's your last day to vote to request a ballot by mail.
Okay.
Since we're coming out today.
Exactly. Thank you.
You can vote early in person without a reason. It's like the term absentee is actually outdated. Okay. You could actually just vote for no reason. You can show up and vote early. It won't be in the same location because they don't staff as many locations all over. They only staff like every block on election day because it's expensive.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of early vote locations. Again, you can find all of that at vote.org. Making a plan is the only way you're actually going to do it. And start normalizing voting conversations. Ask your friends what their plan is. And if they're not sure what their plan is, help them make a plan and offer to watch their kids.
Mm. Yes.
That's actually one of the biggest things why I vote early. One, I'm just so anxious. I have to do it.
Yep.
But also it's so that I can watch other people's kids on election day so that they can find themselves a way to vote. You know, I'll help carpool the kids, whatever it is. And if you feel like you're ready to take a step further and you want to volunteer, you want to make calls, you want to figure out how you can do in Georgia, oh my goodness, every single person you talk to is like a highly targeted voter. Mm-hmm. I would say Swing Left is a really good organization that has letter writing programs, call programs, door knocking programs, if you're really up for it. And the other, look, I mean, I live in a swing congressional district. So literally every person I talk to is a potential voter. And the same for you. That's not true everywhere. But, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, I'm not sure how to have a conversation. I'm not sure where to start. I offer to go into the office of the whatever the campaign is and offer to watch other people's kids, so they can go knock doors.
Wow.
I mean, the biggest barrier that any of us have to actually like picking up and doing it is our childcare.
Yep.
So be the support, be the infrastructure, and let somebody else go a little step further if you're not feeling like you're up to it.
Thank you so much. I have one follow-up question as a voter, an overwhelmed mom, and someone who gets time anxiety. When it comes to local elections, there's a lot of information available about federal elections, and even some of the bigger offices like a state senator in your state. Where should someone go? What is a good resource or couple resources for finding out about who is on the ballot for our local election? What the heck am I actually voting for?
This is literally the hardest thing to answer.
Okay.
Because it's different. So elections are usually run by the county level. Like the county level. And so the structure of what each job does varies state by state. It actually, not state by state and county by county.
Wow.
But even in most states, the Secretary of State, like in some of them, the Secretary of State runs elections, and in some of them, they don't. So like they might have a huge job or their job might be a bloated job with a fancy title.
Yeah.
So because it's so localized, there's not one place that aggregates all the information. What I would say, if you're looking at local elections, there might be nonpartisan elections. So you might not even know like what party they belong to. What I would say is a good resource is to look at who endorses them. That'll give you a sense of what issues they align on. If you're trying to do a quick scan. So, you know, Run for Something is an organization that helps support candidates get elected. So, you know, if they're a Run for Something endorsed candidate, you'd probably get that by looking. You can find out all of this, I would say, probably by looking at their Instagram and their Twitter. But also one of the best resources on candidates is going to the press section of their website. Because if something is important to them, they will have put a press release out on it. See if Emily's List endorsed them. That would mean they're pro-choice. See if the Sierra Club endorsed them. That would mean they're pro-climate change or they acknowledge climate change. You know, I would go up and down the ballot and see who's endorsed them, and that'll give you a good sense of it.
Thank you so much. And thanks for just indulging me in asking these questions, because I think that sometimes these are questions that go through my head and I'm like, I feel stupid for not knowing the answer. Or I just feel like lazy for not looking it up on my own. But I know that's not true. I know that's some negative self-talk, limiting belief BS that I need to just throw in the trash can, because I know I'm not stupid. I know that I am capable of a lot of things. And I know that anybody listening to this, you're not stupid either. And you're capable of doing a lot of things. And there's so much dang information out there that being overwhelmed or wanting to shut down is a natural reaction. I've done it. I'm raising my hand and saying, I'm admitting I've done it. And the stakes are too high for me to do it anymore. So if you feel the same way, please join me in checking out these resources. I'm going to link to them in the show notes. And please take the couple steps of at least going to vote.org, making a plan for how you are going to vote. And early voting has started in many, many states already. I know it has in Georgia. And I'm going to make a plan to vote after I publish this episode. I'm doing priority list here live on the air. And please join me in this, because it is so, so important.
Thank you for doing all of that, for making the plan and normalizing it. So, you know, we live in a culture right now where we pick up other cues from others about what their priorities are, mostly through social media. So post it. I'm begging you, vote early and post it. And then you will be the one to answer the questions for your friends. Oh, you know, can I vote in the same place I did down the block? Well, it's different if you vote early. You will become that resource. So put it out there, like make it, normalize the conversation about voting and making it part of our everyday life.
I love that. Thank you. So I wanted to go back to one of the topics that you talked about today of why we're discussing this, and this is abortion care. So I would like to dive into that a little bit more. Some people might not see the connection between birth, being a childbirth educator, which I am, and abortion. And so I just wanted to talk about that connection, because you stated it before. This is not just abortion care. This is women's health care. This is reproductive health care. And it's for young women, older women, anybody with a uterus. Anybody that identifies, honestly, it affects everybody, because everybody has someone that they love with a uterus. Let's be honest. They might be your daughter. They might be your mother, but it really does impact everybody. And abortion care is not just about the negatively stereotyped, politicized version of the word abortion. Abortion is so much more widespread than that. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about your perspective on this, please.
So I think the Dobbs decision, unfortunately, has opened up the conversation about what it is to what is encompassed in abortion care, that it is care for a miscarriage. It is care for if the fetus is not growing. It is care to save the life of the mother. From my perspective, I've worked in politics for long enough to know that a lot of people don't want to say that they are just like across the board pro-abortion, because they feel like there should be some limiting factors on it. I will say I am across the board for abortion, because the process of being pregnant and having children rocked me.
Yep.
Rocked me. And I wanted those kids. and I made the decision to have them. And I could never, ever imagine putting this on somebody else because I had a values judgment about them. If they are financially, someone else is not financially stable, they should be able to make that decision. If they are in an abusive relationship, they should be able to make that decision. And so I will never judge somebody else for the decisions they have, but the children are too, it's too big.
It is.
Like, it's just too big to not choose it.
Yeah.
And so I've got, you know, I think I lived in Washington long enough that I had started using like hedging language around, you know, like, you know, pro-choice. And you know what? I'm actually throwing it out the window. Like I didn't know I was going to, but I ended up speaking at a rally right after the Dobbs decision in our town. And it was the first time I said it, and I will now say it again and again and again. I am pro-abortion. And I think that some of these states that are passing these like full abortion bans, first of all, the fact that there is no exception for somebody underage is insane, because if you're underage, you can't consent to it. You literally cannot consent to it.
I would like to take this time to also say that I am pro-abortion. I completely agree with you. And thank you for saying that. And thank you for being brave. I know that sometimes saying stuff like this comes at a cost, and I'm willing to pay it because the stakes are too high. I just wanted to state very, very clearly that ectopic pregnancy is not a viable pregnancy. It's never a viable pregnancy. And it doesn't matter what article you read or what politician you talk to about it. If you're wondering about healthcare, look at medical experts. And the lack of exceptions, I mean, it just speaks to the fact that this is an all-out war against people with uteruses. I'm going to just come right out and say it. That is my personal opinion, that this is an all-out war against people with uteruses.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that also rides me back where I was going there, that I agree. Well, first of all, I've gotten a lot of hate mail over the years. I was on Fox News as a Democratic strategist for a very long time. This is nothing new for me to get hate mail. So if you're offended by this, sound off.
Yep.
Not really going to make a difference to me.
Yep.
Feel free. But I do think that the bans that are being passed right now are so, I mean, they are so extreme. They are all out bans on abortion, that I think that many of them over the next few years will get walked back a little bit, but only if there is pressure, only if there is pressure on the politicians. Because I think what is going to happen is they're going to hear enough horror stories of people they know and people they love and their constituents that reach out to them, that they will walk it back a little bit. Here's the problem with that. One, it's not enough. Two, women are going to die.
Yep. And they already are.
Yeah. And I don't particularly, or someone I know or anybody, want to be in that number. Like, I am done having kids now. I have my IUD in. I finally apparently learned about birth control, 3 kids in. But if I were still trying, I would be terrified right now.
Me too.
I mean, the stories are horrible. And they're going to eventually start to realize, like, oh, maybe this wasn't the best idea. Maybe learning from a bunch of old white dudes about abortion wasn't the best idea.
Right, exactly. For me, I live in the South. I live in what some refer to as the Bible Belt. I was raised Southern Baptist. I mean, I've got religious roots. They go deep. But the reason I bring this up is because there is a very strong tie between the right to choose to have an abortion or not and the religious right or religious ties. And so I just wanted to share what I have learned over the course of me parsing all this out for the last 2 years, because I really started to dig into this in the summer of 2020 because I just couldn't take it anymore. This is not just about abortion. This is not just about morality. It actually goes back to some really disgusting parts of the United States, and it actually ties back to racism in the United States. And so I just wanted to state that the religious right, when I say the religious right, conservative family values being associated with choosing a political candidate for casting your vote, to say the Republican Party is the party of conservative family values. That only happened in less than the last 50 years. When Roe v. Wade came out, most clergy of the Christian church actually had no opinion on abortion access, or they were pro-abortion access because they were the ones dealing with the women who were coming to them saying, I need help. And so I just wanted to say that if that is the one thing where your heart is pinging you and you're like, I just don't know, please, please, please go look up the history of the religious right. Go look up the what work was done by Paul Weyrich and what happened before the Reagan administration came in. I would do probably a poor job of summarizing it, but I just want to point people to the resources that I read that completely opened my eyes and actually enabled me to completely separate out the morality versus taking care of people and the humanity of people that we're trying to care for.
And I'm Jewish, and Jewish religion actually says that you should put the life of the mother first.
There you go.
That if the mother can't survive and if the mother will be sick, then you should have an abortion.
Yeah.
And the religious conversation actually really frustrates me that there's no, and not you, I mean like the court.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm thinking, what about my religion?
Yep.
My religion dictates that I should be able to have this abortion. So that, and I think I saw one lawsuit that a Jewish organization is suing a state. But I felt like there should be more. I don't know. If you're a lawyer in one of these states, maybe tap in from maternity leave and ask them why they're not mounting these suits more.
Yeah, seriously. So is there anything else that you think would be important for listeners to hear during this episode?
I mean, acknowledging how overwhelming voting is and the barrage of messages and not sure if this is a moment that you feel like you can actually get up off the couch and maybe get you out the door or whatever it is. We're sort of numb to the phrase, this is the most important election of our lifetime. But, you know, I think I've laid out, we've seen it already. I mean, I actually happen to think the most important election of our lifetime probably already happened. And now we are, I think it was 2016, and now we are dealing with the consequences of it. And now we are just trying to maintain the rights that we've known, that we've grown up with, and that we thought our country was in the direction of giving us. Look, even in New York, the Republican congressional candidate who was totally anti-abortion is now like gaining for governor. So like people, even where people think their vote doesn't matter, it actually really does matter. All the polls know nothing. I'm telling you guys this right now. The pollsters do not know how to poll, and every seat is up for grabs.
Wow.
So I would say this really is a time to engage if you care about your uterus or anybody else's. And it's easy. It's not hard. And it doesn't have to be overwhelming. And it's okay to have questions. There is not a person who works in politics that would judge you for asking any question. And if they are, then they're terrible and tell them to go back to Washington. This is why I left. But, you know, I did an organizing meeting the other day with a bunch of moms from the PTA just to learn like what's on the ballot and how we can engage in it. And we just started like asking our school to send out like reminder, this is the end of the voter registration period for us. Those things are nonpartisan, reminding people of election day. If you have a business, if you have employees, and by the way, if you have a nanny, then you have employees, reminding people that you to offer paid time off to allow their employees to be able to vote. Think about the circle of influence that you have, and it doesn't have to be hard. It can be easy, but the stakes are certainly high.
Yeah, they really are. And thank you so much for everything that you have shared. Thank you so much for sharing your story and for your vulnerability. And if anybody would like to follow you on social media or anywhere, where can they do so?
You can find us on She Pivots the Podcast on Instagram.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I just really cannot stress enough, I appreciate all the work you're doing in the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show today. If you liked the episode and would like to hear more, please follow Finding Your Village wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to use the code FYVPODCAST to sign up for the postpartum class at pregnancytopreschool.net to save 15% today. Thank you so much, and stay safe, healthy, and connected.